we're so fast to chase the title or the perception of our success. But the reality is our success comes from what we know, and we get our knowledge over time.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. Thanks for tuning in every single week. It's Ben at yourbrandmarketing.com. It's how to get in touch with me, connect with me on LinkedIn, and let's have a conversation. I love to hear what you guys think. I love to hear your ideas, who you'd like to hear from, and the ideas that you want me to share with you. So we have Kim Modell-Platz coming to us live this week from Mastermind Sets Limited. And we're going to talk about, why do we hide behind titles and labels? Kim, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ben. It's a real privilege to come and chat to you.
You know what? I think we're going to have a lot of fun. I love the conversation, titles and labels. I haven't had a title on a business card in probably 25 years. And people look at my business card and they don't know how to treat me. They have no idea. Am I president? Am I CEO? Am I chief bottle washer? Am I head cook? How do they address me and what deference should they give me? And I'm going, you know what? I am who I am. This is who I am. This is what I do. The title doesn't matter. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because we were having a great conversation about it off air.
Yeah, no, for me, it's always been fascinating. I mean, as human beings, we love a title, we love a label, and dependent on the title or the label really depends on how we show up and how we engage with each other. And it shouldn't really matter because we are just all human beings. And at our base, we all want to be listened to, we want to be respected, and we want to be understood. The title shouldn't make any difference to that. And yet we do, don't we? Because I haven't had a title for years. I never used to use it in corporate life. The first time I felt like I might maybe need one was when I set up on my own. And all of a sudden, having spent nearly 30 years in corporate life, going and doing massive conferences, walking into rooms of thousands of people and having no issue, even though I didn't use my title, psychologically, I knew what it was. So I knew that that almost gave me the right to be in the room. And now all of a sudden, I remember being sat in the car. I was outside an Indian restaurant in an industrial estate in Sleaford, of all places, about to go to a networking thing. And I was like, I can't do this. This is ridiculous. I can't do it. I mean, why is anyone going to want to talk to me? Why is it any different than how anyone would have wanted to talk to you last month when you worked in corporate life? They're here to have a conversation with you, not your job title. You're still the same person. You've still got the same skills. You've still got the same knowledge and experience that you can share. It's just that you've now gone on your own. And I was like, do you know what? I'm going to stick by my decision to not have a title and not have one. And I'm just going to go in there as I'm Kim. Really great to meet you. Let me hear your story, because we've all got a story. And if we give people the respect of listening to theirs, we learn something new.
No, we always do. I mean, I love hearing people's stories. I love hearing, where did they come from? What brought them to this point? What have they learned along the way? So let's take that as a launch off point for you. Give my listeners a little understanding of what took you out of the corporate world and took you out on your own. Where did you come from? Where are you today? And then we'll talk about where we're going.
Okay, cool. So I had probably an unusual start to my career. So I had a dream when I was a child to be a hairdresser. That's all I wanted to be. And I left school at 15 and I made my dream come true. I became a hairdresser and I launched my own business when I was just before I was 19. And I thought that was it. My life's sorted. Everything I ever dreamed of has come true.
That's it. I'm 19. I've made my goal. Life is good.
I'm done. I'm here. What's next to do? And then I ended up when I was in my early 20s. I lost the feeling in my hands and legs and they didn't know what it was. And it took quite a while with the doctors for them to find out. And it turned out I was allergic to perm lotion, which in the 90s was a bit of a problem because perms were quite in. And I was so allergic to it, I couldn't even be there if somebody else was doing a perm. So I had to sell my salon, sold it to the girl who worked for me. She still runs it today. My niece still goes. And I had to start again. And I was like, oh my goodness, what do you do when everything you thought you were going to do suddenly comes to a crashing halt? So I got a 15-hour a week, 6-month temporary contract at the local bank while I worked out what to do next. And then just kept going. So that started my 25 plus year career in banking. I felt like I was behind, you know, because I was starting my career again in my late 20s. And so I tackled life as I've always tackled life, which is, I'll give it a go. What's the worst that can happen? I'll get it wrong. I'll learn, but I might get it right. So let's see how this goes. And that did me wonders. I managed to very quickly make my way up to manager, then to director, and then to the board. But I kept being put forward on these future leader courses, and they would put me on them based on something they'd seen in me. But then they'd immediately give me an application form and then suck their teeth when they went through it going, ah, where's your degree? Well, I don't have one. Where are your A-levels? Well, kind of don't have any of those either. I've got an MBQ in hairdressing I'm really proud of, but clearly you're less interested in. And it really started to make me feel like I shouldn't be there, that I was perhaps a bit of a fraud. So I suffered for a lot of years with imposter syndrome. Even when I got onto the board, I was convinced that one day they were going to turn around and say, oh my goodness, we put the hairdresser on the board. That's a bit awkward. Get her off. And they never did, but that was still a big fear. And so that was my life for a lot of years. I was really fortunate. I got headhunted by people that worked with me in the past. I moved into IT software, back into financial services, and kind of spanned those two. And then I had a second and then a third potentially life-threatening illness. And the third one was when my little girl was just not quite two. And I ended up in intensive care with double lung pneumonia and realized that I was killing myself for a job I didn't enjoy. And I'd been desperately trying to rebuild our lives and that things hadn't worked out the way that we'd intended them to. And I remember being in the hospital and saying, if I make it out, if I survive, I'll make the changes that I need to make. And I thought about, what am I passionate about? And I've been passionate for years about leadership, but about really connecting with people. And I believe as leaders that you can lead with kindness, humanity, and courage. You have to have courage. You have to make the commercial decisions. I've had to run several redundancies in my career. They're not nice, but you have to do them sometimes for the company to survive. But you do something like that, you do it with humanity, and you do it with kindness, and you treat people with respect. And then you can still sleep at night. And so I realized that actually, if that was my passion, maybe I should set up a business where I go and help other people connect better with their people, to lead their way through difficult situations and do it with finesse and do it in a way that creates a culture that engages, enthuses, and empowers their people. And so I came out of hospital on the Wednesday. On the Monday, I went into work, quit my job, and retrained to be first a leadership coach, and now I'm also a qualified face whisperer. So I read micro expressions, and it's all really about learning what's not just what's being said, but what's not being said, so that you better understand the other person, so that you can help them to be the best that they can be.
So I shouldn't play poker against you. Is that what you're trying to say?
Probably not. No.
I want to go back to something you said, and you kind of glossed over it, but I think it's important. You said something that says, I felt like I had to change my life in my 20s, and then that was late. And I think that that's an interesting thought process, because I see that a lot today. You have these kids that are 22, 23, 24, that are desperate to make a life for themselves, and they need to have that title of director or manager or vice president or whatever. And they're willing to give up the money. They're willing to give up the authority just to have that title. And I personally think that that's putting us all in a really bad situation. But I want to hear your thoughts on this, because I sit there and go, okay, guys, if the title is way more important to you than actually knowing how to do the job and being good at the job, we have a problem both from a personal point of view and also from a corporate point of view.
Absolutely. But for me, it's always been much more important that I could do a good job. And my dad taught me and my brother many years ago to think about every day as if it were your money. So get to the end of every day at work and say, if this were my money, would I pay me for today? And if the answer was ever no, make damn sure that it wasn't no the next day. So you went in and you tried harder. So that was always my ethos. I want to be good at it. I want to feel like I've added some value. I want to feel like I've made a difference, because I believe, even if you love work, and I do love work, that we don't live to work, we work to live. So I work, one, because I love it and I absolutely love helping people, but two, because I want to create a nice life and the right environment for my little girl. So there's that balance. So I look at it and go, if I've got to spend 12 hours not with my little girl, I want to know I'm adding value, because I'm giving up something so precious to exchange for that. So I need to know that it's value add. But I think you're right. I mean, for me, I felt like I was late because I didn't know where I was starting. So it wasn't a case of I needed a particular title, or I needed to know broadly the direction I was going in. That's where I felt like I was behind, was I've been so clear. I was going to be a hairdresser. I was going to run a salon. I knew exactly what it was I wanted to do. And now here I was floating around in my 20s going, oh, I don't know. What should I do now? I've got no idea. But it was much more finding my purpose. And you're so right. Today, we're so fast to chase the title or the perception of our success. But the reality is our success comes from what we know, and we get our knowledge over time, and we can get there a lot faster. I talk to a lot of people now who, when they're trying to price what it is that they do, and they go, oh, yeah, but it only takes me like 10 minutes to do that. And I was like, yeah, but it took you 30 years to learn how to do it in 10 minutes. They're paying for the 30 years, not the 10 minutes. But we've kind of progressed into a little bit of a throwaway society where almost all of that's becoming less useful until we realize there's a gap. There was some research done recently that showed that it was, I think it was 79% of millennials are actively looking for another job because of the lack of leadership skills and development that they're being given in their current roles. So to your point, a lot of them are kind of getting the title, but they're foregoing the skills, they're foregoing the development, and they're foregoing the money that should come with that. So it's a bit of an empty victory, and they're realizing it and being very unhappy as a result. So now lots of companies are having to work on, what do we do to better improve how we develop leadership skills and strategy and things for our younger generations to enable them to be even more effective, because they've got such value to bring.
Well, I mean, we are truly in the world of the Peter Principle. I mean, where people are being promoted to their level of incompetence, where we sit there and say, well, if we don't give this person a directorship, if we don't give this person a VP-ship, they're going to leave. And the question is, okay, but what if they stay? What is the damage that they're going to do to your brand, to your business, to your customers, to your employees, just to promote them? And I think that there has to be that training. There has to be that purpose, the goals, the ability to be empathetic, to listen, to learn, to lead effectively, to be able to do that. And leadership is a mindset. It's not a job title.
No, it's a purpose. If you want to go and lead people, you've got to have a purpose that says you are willing to give up your ego for theirs, because your sole role, it took me a long time to realize this. I used to, being a hairdresser was my Achilles heel. It was the thing that I hoped nobody'd ever find out. And I now realize it's my greatest strength. Because as a hairdresser, they teach you to listen to what the person really wants to achieve, and then to help them to achieve their dream, and to leave, let them leave as the best version of themselves. Well, that's leadership. If you can listen to people, to your people, understand what they're trying to achieve, help them to achieve it, and create them becoming the best version of themselves, you'll be the leader that they tell their children about. You'll be the person that they will come and work for again and again and again, because they're learning something. You do that when you listen to them, because you want to learn from them too.
Well, and you're also building trust. You're building trust within the organization. People trust that you're going to do what you need to do, and you're enabling other people to do what they need to do. And that's through, as you said, it's effective communication, it's effective leadership. And it doesn't matter whether you have the title of a vice president, a director, a manager, whatever. I'm trying to remember who it was that I had on the show, and they used the term, everybody should be called a leadership coach. And it doesn't matter whatever your title is, you're a leadership coach, because your job, first and foremost, is to help other people succeed. It's not about your title. It's not about how important you are. It's not about what other people think about you just because of your title. It's about what people think about you because you help them succeed and you help them be the best that they need to be.
Absolutely. And if people are worried about your title, they'll stop sharing with you the most vital pieces of information that are going to help you be successful. I remember years ago going and doing a transformational change piece, and I'd been there, I've probably been there about 6-7 months. I went to talk to one of the guys on the phone, and he got all flustered and he went, "Oh, I can't talk to you." And I was like, "Why not?" And he went, "Well, you're like really important." I said, "It's ridiculous. Of course I'm not." I said, "I've got a job to do. And if I get my job wrong, we've got a problem. But you've got a job to do. And if you get your job wrong, we've got a problem. And last time I checked, you cut me, I bleed. I'm pretty certain if I cut you, you'd bleed. Don't tell HR I threatened to cut you." And he was like, "You're like really normal." I was like, "Yeah, I'm a human being, love. And I need to know, I want to come and sit with you. You're on the phone every day talking to our customers. You are going to know much more what bothers them, what excites them, what frustrates them than any of these people that I've got that are sitting in these allegedly more senior roles are going to be able to do, because you are at the front line. And that's what I want to learn. I want to know, what's it feel like to be you? What's it feel like to be them? Where are we getting it wrong? What are the really stupid things that we're doing that you assume we know about? Because I promise you, we don't. Even if they're really obvious, I promise you, we do not know what they are. So if I come and sit and talk to you and you tell me, then actually I can make this a better place for you and a better place for our end client. But I need you to tell me where we're getting it wrong and where we get in our own way.
And I think there's that whole telling truth to power. And I think that we need to get beyond that. We need to sit there and say, you know what? Whoever I am within the organization, there are things that I know that other people don't. There's things that I'm aware of that other people don't. And if I bite my tongue and assume that they know stuff that I know, everybody is going to be worse off. And if we sit there and say, you know what? I don't know everything. I don't care if you're the CEO or the person who's on the phone talking to the customers. We all know what we know and we all don't know what we don't know. But if we can sit there and say, wait a second, I hear a problem. I'm talking to customers day after day after day after day after day. And I hear the same thing happening over and over. It's my job. And that's my job as a leadership coach, because I'm being a leader in my own right, to be able to say, we have a problem. And if we don't fix this, it's going to become a much bigger problem.
Absolutely. And I think large part is, certainly in the career I had for a lot of years, we were told whatever happens, never show vulnerability, right? Whatever happens, never show it. And I was like, but all that's really doing is going to create a culture where it's not okay to fail. We can't make mistakes. And actually, when we make mistakes, when we learn, it's as long as we're not making really ill-judged mistakes, as long as you tried to do the right thing and something went wrong. So one of the things that I teach people now is how to share vulnerability without losing credibility. There's a fine line, but if you can share some vulnerability, what you do is you create an open space for your people to share theirs. So it's no longer unacceptable to not be perfect, because we've been striving for perfection for years. We're supposed to be good at everything. We even teach people, teach our kids at school, they've got to be all rounders. And yet we know we're not really all rounders. We're usually good at one or two things and okay at a few and mediocre at a couple. And that's okay, because we are perfectly imperfect. Imperfection is our perfection. And once we can embrace that and go, do you know what? I can help you here, here, and here, but do you know where I'm hopeless? I am hopeless here, here, and here. So I need you to help me by upskilling me here, and I will, in return, upskill you there. Together, we'll be better as a result of it. But it's having that confidence to stand there as a leader and go, I don't know everything, nor do I expect to. That's why I have you. Because if I knew it all, I wouldn't need any of you. So it's actually much better for you that I don't know this, or I don't know it as well as you, because it means your job's guaranteed.
There's a lot of leaders that don't do that. There's a lot of leaders today that do. They hide behind their titles. They say, I am so-and-so. I am the CEO. I'm the vice president of whatever. You need to listen to me, whether I know what I'm talking to or not. And I think that there's a lot of companies today that are losing great employees with this great resignation that we're going through today, because there are too many leaders that think just because I have a title, I'm owed deference and I'm owed respect and I'm all knowing and nobody else knows anything. And I think that's going to be a real problem, because those are the people that need to refocus and retrain and have an attitude shift in order for them to continue to be successful moving forward.
Absolutely. And they're going to need a reskill, because actually it takes a different set of skills to be able to do that. And I think the research showed recently that 57% of people leave their boss, not the organization. I use this one all the time. That means more than one in two people that leave you. And if that doesn't make you terrified as a leader and go, what do I need to do differently to be better? I don't know what does. But the research went on to show that 64% of people would take a pay cut if they were given a different boss. So they would actually stay in the company and earn less not to work with you. And nobody wants that as their legacy. So you kind of look at it and go, okay, what could I do differently? What skills can I learn to make sure that I'm not losing talent? Because the other thing is, everybody knows these stats. So the minute somebody who's deemed as talented leaves an organization, it actually has an impact on their boss. Because if everybody else knew they were talented and they've now gone, you look at it and go, well, did they leave us or did they leave them? If they left them, how many more great people have left that person? And that's starting to be the conversations that people are having, because the war to attract and retain talent is hotting up. People are finding it easier to find jobs than companies are finding it easy to maintain them. So if you think about it, your competitive edge moving forward is going to be your culture and your leadership style, because benefits are a bit me too. You can match them really easily, but what you can't match is how it feels every day when I turn up and go into work. How am I treated? How do I feel? What value do I feel I'm giving and getting? And a lot of that is masked by the leadership. I remember going to an interview a while ago, only about 4 or 5 years ago, and the group HR director said, Kim, you've had a lot of jobs, and I mean a lot. So what confidence would I have if I gave you this job that you wouldn't leave? And I said, can I ask, are you planning on going anywhere? And he looked a little bit startled. He was like, no, why? And I said, well, I can honestly say I've never yet left the boss who recruited me, but I have left the boss that replaced them. And he went, it's a good answer. I went, it's an honest one. If the person I'm working for doesn't match my values and my purpose, and I don't think they align to the companies, I'll just go somewhere else. It might be a really bad character flaw of mine, but I can't work for somebody that doesn't show the same values for people that I do. I said, and so I've never yet left the person who recruited me, but I have always left their successor if that successor has ended up with a different set of values to me.
And that's an interesting thing, is because we're sitting in a world, especially in large corporations, doesn't matter where they are in the world, you have a level of mid-level managers that are there and realize sooner or later that they're not being promoted. And as they realize they're not being promoted, they're getting frustrated and they're becoming more surly and they're becoming more obstinate and trying to control the power within the area that they have. And the reason that they're not being promoted is because they are not the ones that are leading their people. And there's two sides to that coin. The coin is, yes, they're not great leaders, and they've been promoted to a position where they've stuck and they're going to continue to be stuck. But the problem is the people above them are not great leaders either, because they're not realizing this and they're not doing something about this and doing what it takes to retrain these people to make them more effective. Most leaders who are ineffective because they don't know what good leadership looks like. They don't understand how to be great leaders. They haven't received the training that they need. They haven't received the mentorship that they need. They haven't received the coaching that they need. And they feel that just because I'm leader, I have the title, everybody should respect me. And that's far from the truth. And I think that we as companies blame this person who's frustrated and power hungry and whatever. And yes, they have some guilt in this, but we also need to say, what's the culture around this person that's enabling it?
That's it. Because often when people are responding like that, they're responding out of fear. We all know if we're not doing a good job. We've all had those days where it's not gone the way we wanted it to, and we know it's not been great. Imagine if you're turning up every day and you know you're not doing well. The level of fear you must be operating under that today could be the day. Today could be the day that they decide it isn't going to go there. And I know from mine with my imposter syndrome, the voice that you had in your head that was constantly telling you that you weren't good enough, you were going to get found out, you were going to get bounced. And mine was imposter syndrome, because even though all the facts showed me that actually I was good at this, you know, I kept winning awards, I've got the most engaged workforce, I was in double-digit growth quarter after quarter, and yet I still didn't think I was good enough. But imagine for all those people where their engagement scores aren't great, where they are constantly getting people complaining about them, where the results aren't what they should do, and they really cling into that ego and like stand behind it, because it becomes a shield. And actually what we're not realizing is they're suffering as much as their people are suffering. So we really should be stepping in there and giving them the help, giving them the support, so that they can actually learn those new skills, because change is uncomfortable. We know that. One of the things that I often do with the audience is say, do me a favor, fold your arms. And then when they've done it, say, great, unfold them and fold them the other way. And it's fascinating to watch, because some people can do it pretty much straight away. Some people have to look at their arms and really focus on what it is.
And, some people can't do it at all. They're sitting there fumbling.
Yeah. And it's like they like look around at everybody else and say, how does it feel? Really uncomfortable. And because it's change. You're having to think about it. And we like our comfort zone. We don't grow in it, but we like it. So for a lot of these people, and having done now 15 years of going into organizations doing transformational change, what you find is that there's whole swathes of people that are embedded in their comfort zone, but they're no longer feeling very comfortable, because they know that unless they change, they risk irrelevance. But they're scared to change, and there isn't enough on offer to support them in that journey. But the organizations that get that right, that go, yeah, we need to change, but do you know what? We recognize that leading change means you've got to lead yourself through it as well as lead your people through it. And therefore, we're going to invest in giving you more support as we manage the change, not less support, are the ones that really thrive.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. So how do we help people through this imposter syndrome? Because people are in a position where they're stuck. And it doesn't matter where you are in the organizational structure. You feel that you're not good enough. You feel that you don't have the skills to move forward. And for whatever reason, you feel that you can't ask for help, because then you're going to think that people are going to think less than it. That you have that feeling that people are going to sack you because you don't have the skills that you should have. So how do we, as people that are leading these people at any level, broach those conversations and enable these people to be better? Because it truly is a cultural thing within the organization. And we have to sit there and help people get beyond their titles and labels and get them into being better human beings.
So I do think a big one is sharing some of your own vulnerability. So for example, even during lockdown, and I had that many clients that would get in touch and go, oh, people wouldn't turn on their Zoom camera, or they wouldn't do this. I made it mean something about themselves, because this is the other thing about human beings. We don't respond to the facts. We respond to what we've made them mean. So the fact was they didn't turn on the Zoom camera. What he made it mean was they didn't like him. They didn't respect him. He doesn't even know why they're employing them anymore. And I was like, they just didn't turn on the camera. Let's just rewind for a moment, because you've made that all about you. But actually, I would suggest you ask them a few more questions, because it might be that they're starting to feel disengaged. And a good way when you are disengaged is to put up a barrier. Well, if I can't see you, it's a bit of a barrier. So I might not be in a good place. I might not be coping well myself under this. And he was like, all right. So personally, what I would have done is I'd drop the person a quick note and say, hey, I don't know about you, but I'm really missing the face-to-face interaction and just the ability to have a social chat. I wondered if you were up for a 5-minute, just like a virtual coffee, to just see how you're getting on. I said, because then you're making it okay to not be feeling okay. You're sharing a bit of your vulnerability and then you're giving them an option to come along to something. And he did. And he said, best meetings we've ever had. And I went, yeah, because you were human. You shared something of yourself. So sometimes sharing with your people, which I used to do all the time, which was when I was building my leadership career, these are some of the courses I went on. I went and got mentors. I identified, I talked to clients that have got imposter syndrome. I think this works for everybody. Find your Thrive Hive. Find your 4 or 5 people who you can call on when the going gets tough or when you just need a bit of advice. And they probably need to be very different characters. For me personally, I need someone in there that's going to give me the kick in the pants that I need sometimes when I'm really wallowing in my comfort zone and just tell me to get over myself and get on with it. But I also need somebody sometimes that isn't going to be there with the tough love when I'm not ready for it yet. Some moments where you're like, yeah, right, not quite so tough today. Thanks. I don't want
a little less reality, please.
Yeah, you know? I'd like a bit of sugar with my pill if nobody minds awfully. But having those people that you can call on that you know are going to be honest with you because they have your best interests at heart. I always call it the critical best friend, the person who's going to tell you your bum looks big in it before you go out, not when you've drifted around town all night thinking you look amazing, because you want those people to support you. But sometimes sharing with people that you're developing yourself. You know, I say, my nan used to say this, every day's a school day. And God bless her, she was right. I try and learn something new every day, whether that's to improve on an existing skill or learn something slightly new. Because the more I can improve myself, the better I can serve my people. But it also allows them to go, it's okay to be learning. It's all right. She's still learning. Maybe it's okay that I still learn. And that's why we think about a lot of the major professions. If you're a lawyer, if you're an accountant, you have to do continual professional development because they recognize unless you continue to evolve, you risk irrelevance. So why don't we make that something that is also the norm within leadership? What have you done recently to develop your leadership skills? Even if it's read a book, listen to an audio, listen to a podcast, watch a YouTube. But what are you doing to see what's going on in the world now to keep you relevant to the people you're leading? And if I think if we could make it part of what's expected, I know certainly when I was younger, you got given a coach if you weren't very good. If you weren't very good, we'll give you a coach because you're clearly hopeless. Whereas actually now it's a badge of honor. If you look at most top actors, top athletes, top politicians, top
they all have coaches.
People, they've all got coaches and they've all got mentors. When I first started coaching, somebody went, oh, so you think you're better than the rest of us? And I went, no, we all have blind spots for a reason. We are blind to them. Your coach is just there to shine the light on the blind spot you've got to help you find the route out. I said, and if the coach was actually better than the person they were coaching, it would be their name we knew instead of the top actor, the top businessman, the top politician. We don't know their name because actually what they're really good at is standing behind you and going, you know, when you run, Ben, you're ever so slightly to the left. And if you could straighten that up, you'd shave 3 seconds off your personal best. They're able to see what you can't see because we can't see everything that's going on around us because we're blind to the bits we're blind to.
As I keep telling people, we can't shave the hair on the back of our neck.
You know, absolutely.
It's what's behind us is behind us. And we need other people to be able to look at it and help us through it. Kim, this has been an incredible conversation. And I have one last question for you, and then I'm going to let you out the door.
Okay.
The question I ask everybody is, when you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to know about you and think about you when you're not in the room?
I would like them to think that I listened and that I added value.
We all need value in life. We all need to have somebody in our lives that provide us with value. And thank you for being one of those people.
Oh, bless you.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?